Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The Ad News Pubcast, the podcast that celebrates the industry's penchant for a sociable drop and a chat.
Hi, and welcome to the Ad News Podcast, recorded here at Forbes Street Studios. Today, I'm joined by former seasoned WPP veteran, now pitch doctor, Greg Sparrow-Graham. How are you, Greg?
Thanks, mate. Glad to be here.
I'm going to say Sparrow. Everyone knows Sparrow, so yeah. I think we're just going to go with that.
Yeah, go with it.
So I have to say, at the start, it's been very difficult for me not to intro you with, doctor, doctor, give me the news, just because of
the pitch doctor. Don't give up your day job, mate.
I know. Yeah. Stay with. I hope we got those levels right at the start. But look, I think we're going to kick off a little bit with just, I think to start, what's been happening? Like, we obviously knew that you'd left WPP and that there's been lots of things going on the burner. So I suppose, do you want to let us know where you're at, what's going on? And
yeah, well, I guess I started this consultancy called the Nest Consultancy because that works with a sparrow, obviously.
Yeah.
But the main thing is pitch doctoring is obviously something I've had lots of experience with, but people... It's a skill that people need. So there's a real market need for it. Even I've been offered opportunities in Asia, in Singapore.
Yep.
And people also are prepared to pay for that service, you know, which is also important in any business relationship. So lots of interest in pitch doctoring. I'm also doing some like management and PR stuff, some training and development. But the pitch doctor, I guess, areas sort of got the most attention and the most interest, and people sort of reaching out going, Sparrow, can you help us with this big pitch, or can you come in and, you know, sort of train the team on the best way to win a pitch?
And can I ask, it might be a foolish question, but I just want to know for myself, where does pitch doctoring go most? What sort of level at an agency does it sit in the most?
Look, I mainly work with the pitch team, you know, the team that is really, you know, presenting on the day.
Yep.
So I would help them with their presentation, their story, their actual sort of platform skills of presenting, giving them feedback and help and coaching them every day. So I would sort of really work closely with the team who were literally going to be standing up on the day presenting.
Okay.
But once again, you know, I can, you know, if someone said, you know, come in for a month prior to the pitch, we would help out with the whole crafting of the pitch process.
Yeah, okay.
Cool. You know, sort of every element of it.
Okay, well, that obviously leads into, I guess, sort of the big thing. Obviously, by the way, I'm alone today on the podcast. The team is out and about, so we've got Sparrow in here to help out. But I think we're going to pick a big topic, which is, if you haven't guessed it yet, pretty obvious. It's pitching.
Awesome.
And who better to help? So I guess first and foremost, jumping off point, what is it now that clients are looking for when they are waiting for a pitch to come to them?
Look, normally, and now once again, I guess the big question is, are they prepared to pay for it?
Mm.
But they're normally after, you know, great business ideas, they're going to grow their business, right? So it's what, you know, what's the return on investment? What, you know, is this idea going to grow my business? Is this idea going to work? And then I think it's a combination of the best people, the best talent. So, you know, grow my business, deliver on return on investment and effectiveness. And then I want the best people who, once again, understand, you know, data, all these different areas of the business that I'm interested in. So I think they have high expectations, but sometimes maybe they're not prepared to pay for those. Mm. So it's a real catch-22 because they want everything and they want the best quality and the best people and the best ideas. And then you come down to, do you see value in that? So I guess we might come back to that later on.
Yeah, I was about to say, I'd like to know why the willingness to pay has declined. But I guess how has it evolved as well? How has pitching evolved? I think that's a big question now, particularly.
Look, I think a lot of it probably in the past, it may be a little bit in the past, I guess there was better storytelling and maybe a bit more sort of theatre and maybe a bit more showbiz, maybe. I mean, I sort of think about back
razzle
in the
dazzle,
day,
that sort of
maybe
thing.
Maybe a bit more razzle dazzle, but I mean, you know, sort of pitch theatre, but in a relevant way. Whereas now I think it's very much around, you know, what's the solution? What's the effectiveness for this? You know, don't wrap it up nicely. Just what is it? Mm. You know, don't tell me about how you made the watch. You know, like, what's the time?
Right.
You know, so very, you know, not that, you know, telling great stories with compelling sort of theatre isn't great to grab people's attention, but to me it's very much around the real, like, what are they going to deliver? You know, it's sort of quite hardcore.
Okay. So I suppose the next question there is, what are agencies doing right at the moment in this space, and where's it going wrong, and where does it need to improve?
God, that's a good question. What are they doing right? I'm not sure they're doing enough right.
You know?
Yeah. I think sometimes people don't listen to the client enough. So they're sort of too much talking about themselves and what are the real client issues or the real client challenges that you know the solution for. And, you know, what's the real brief? You know, you may have a brief, but is that the underlying real brief? You know, that may not be the reason for the pitch, but they've given you this brief, you know. So sometimes look beyond the brief or what's really behind the brief.
Right.
And I'm not sure people do that. You know, it's like, okay, off they go and they answer question one through to, you know, so they sort of tackle it in a very logical way, but step back and take some time to think about it and go, why, you know, what do they really need on their business? Why are they reviewing? What's the real brief?
So is that sort of like, what, identifying problems that they might not even know are there? Or?
Well, there's some of that, exactly. Yeah. Like, you know, for instance, have they articulated their real issue or the real problem?
Yeah, sure.
And maybe they haven't. You know, because sometimes it might be superficial, or they tend to going through the motions with all these questions. But, you know, what's the real business issue, and then can you provide the solution? And I think, as I said, I'm not sure a lot of agencies talk about themselves and don't spend enough time really listening to the client. And I think listening, our industry, we're not good listeners.
Mm.
We tend to want to talk a lot.
Yeah, okay.
Me included, right?
You know.
No, but you know what I mean? I think
yeah.
Sometimes we need to listen better to the client or the consultant and really understand the business challenge. And I just don't think we're good at that.
What's the, I suppose, that's a hard thing to improve on though, isn't it?
Yeah.
When it's something so ingrained, I suppose.
Yeah. Well, I guess the only way, you know, well, it goes both ways. You know, if you're not successful and not converting, you really got to take a good hard look at yourself and go, what are the reasons we haven't been converting this business? You know, why is, you know, one creative agency or one media agency, you know, what's their secret sauce? Why are they being successful?
Mm.
But really have a good hard look at yourself. And I'm not sure we do that either. Sometimes, you know, we blame it on other things. Oh, yeah, they dropped their price, or they, you know, they knew the client from a past relationship. Like, sometimes we make excuses about losing versus having a good hard look at ourselves and go, why weren't we successful? What are we learning from this? How are we going to change what we're doing? What's the real thing we need to take out of this loss?
Mm. Well, what about from a client perspective though as well? Because they're obviously asking a lot more, as much as, you know, media agencies need to deliver a lot more. So I suppose, is there some level of this where you need to also be mindful that the times have changed and what the client expects out of a media agency? Not to say that a media agency doesn't have to come to terms with that as well. But
yeah, no, I think, once again, clients expect a lot and have high expectations, and, you know, maybe, you know, and are they being clear about the main priorities, or, you know, what is the real issue? So I guess honesty and then trust and just being open. And also, is it a real pitch? Even that sort of simple question about, you know, do you really want to move?
Yeah.
You know, is the incumbent, you know, are you happy with that relationship and you're going through the motions, or do you have to do it every 3 or 4 years? Or are you really unhappy and you want to move and it's a real pitch? You know, so sometimes, because you put agents through a lot of work, and if you're not really serious about moving, or you're not up for the change, even though you've said you are.
Yeah. But also, I feel like I've noticed that, and don't get me wrong, only a short time here at Ad News, but already I hear constantly the speed of the carousel has grown over the past 5 years. So that people go to pitch a lot quicker than what they used to.
Well, I think that's a combination of new CMOs or new people in those roles. Normally when someone comes into an organization, they tend to want to change and do new stuff.
Yeah.
Not always right, because they may have this brilliant sort of brand or this great proposition or, you know, this great campaign which they just want to shake up because I'm the new guy and I want to have a new campaign or a new agency or a new team. So so the change on the client side, and also I just think because things are tough, you know, when things are challenging and tough, you tend to want to be open to changing up your partners, you know. And, you know, that's just a sort of reflection of the tough times we're in.
Well, let's talk about the obvious elephant in the room, which is procurement and I suppose price. I mean,
That can be good guys, by the way, or good ladies too. I mean, because I don't want procurement to be the bad guys.
Okay.
But I think sometimes what happens in a pitch is that maybe the marketing team or the CMO or the people that, you know, really should be making the decisions, they've actually stepped back and left it to procurement, who are used to negotiating prices for widgets.
Yeah.
You know, not sort of service organizations or dealing with incredibly talented people or creative people. And you can't compare that to a cost of a widget.
Yeah.
But in these tough times, both globally and locally, sometimes I think the marketing people have stepped back and procurement's taken over, or they're running the pitch.
So walk me through, I guess, the impact of letting that happen.
Far out. Well, yeah, I think crazy. And we've, you know, it's now a fact of life, good or bad. So I think firstly we have to work out, how do we work with procurement? Do we have the skill set? And is that, do you need to, you know, bring in different people who are used to dealing with that situation that maybe, you know, are more skilled at negotiating with procurement? Because that's a whole different skill set versus someone who's moved into a brand new organization. They're a new CEO. They want to get some runs on the board. They want a headline in Ad News. They want you interviewing them because they're a hot agency. And they're just going to be incredibly flexible and whatever procurement want, go, yes, three bags full, sir. You know, I want your business. So sometimes you maybe don't hold or value what you offer.
Yeah.
You undersell yourself.
Is that going to do, that's got to do damage to the agency, right? It's got to put an immense amount of pressure on you.
Totally. Because I think, once again, I understand the situation. But, you know, when you get a global deal where you've had to, once again, give away payment terms or be incredibly flexible on cost, or you've had to do stuff where you can't even cover your salary base, you know, that's not great, not a great business decision for the future.
Mm.
And so then you've, once again, you know, that puts enormous pressure on the agency and the people internally. But I understand how it happens. And people say they don't do it, but of course, you know, if you've got that big carrot there and you want that win, it's so like...
You can't resist, right?
You can't resist. You buckle, right? You drop your pants and you do crazy stuff, even though you won't talk about that out in the press.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, no one wants to say they won the business on price.
No, okay, yeah. It's not sexy, right?
It's not sexy. You say, oh, we won it because of our strategic skills. But wow, like you're doing that for 1%. Like, I'm not sure about that. Or what? You know, or whatever the crazy fee structure is.
So, I mean, I suppose, is there going to be a solution to this in the future, or is this sort of maybe a necessary evil that you have to deal with? I mean, I can't see a way around it. If you're allowed to negotiate on price, you're always going to want to negotiate on price.
Look, I guess it takes some tough management, some tough CEOs and some good agencies. And hey, there's some great agencies. So maybe it takes a couple to literally go, no, we aren't going to accept those terms, or no, you know, we value the service we provide and we value our people and we're not going to do it at that fee, and walk away. Now that's tough, but you know, how good is that? And also great for your staff to know that you walked away from a piece of business because it wasn't profitable. Surely your clients want you to make money. I mean, don't they?
Yeah, you'd hope so.
You would hope so, but not all of them do. I mean, you know, so you'd hope you find clients that see the value in it, are prepared to pay and value that trusted advisor relationship, you know, and that doesn't come, you know, for like peanuts.
Yeah. Look, I mean, I don't think it's a solution that has an immediate answer. I think
no, it totally don't. And is in the current economic conditions, you know, it's not going to solve itself. But I think it does take some brave industry leaders to literally go, no, we value ourselves and our people and our service, and walk away from some stuff.
Okay. Look, I mean, I think we've touched on a lot of stuff, but it's going to come back to a pretty core question, isn't it? I mean, how do you win? and how do you improve your conversions?
Look, once again, you've got to have just great ideas that grow the client's business, and that can be creatively or media or across. You know, will this grow my business? What's the return on investment of this? Will this be effective? Will this drive results? You know, and most people want results like tomorrow. Like they don't want results in 12 months' time. So it's like, will this drive business tomorrow?
Mm.
You know, and I'm not saying that's always the right case, because what about the brand equity down the track or the brand value? But if you need results now, like you've got to sort of prove that, and you've got to have the proof points and all the analytics to go, here's this great business building idea. It's going to work. You're going to measure it. You're going to look at the metrics. And also, you know, you're going to sort of stay behind it and believe in it.
Mm.
So, yeah, I think it look, once again, you got to prove, yeah, it's all about the ROI.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, I've got you cornered, so I got to ask another question.
Yeah, where can I go?
Yeah, it's out the window. If you hear a smashing noise, Sparrow's flown away. No, look, I think that the one thing that keeps coming up, and I'm going to move away from pitching, and I've heard it already today from Danny Bass, it is this concept of the changing agency model. And I think some people's ears bleed when they hear it, because they've, in some cases, been hearing it for many years.
True.
But it's starting to hit a bit of a fever pitch now, because you do have things like consultancies in the mix. You have more in the picture now than you did before. And there's a few holding groups out there who have changed that agency model and realized they've gone too big too fast.
Uh-huh.
So I suppose, where do you sit on what is the changing nature of an agency model, and are we getting a little bit ahead of ourselves already?
Look, the thing is, I mean, there isn't one size fits all. I know that's obvious, and you've heard that before. But each client may have, you know, what is the tailored solution or the bespoke solution for me, right? And that could vary for a retailer to a packaged goods client to, you know, various in between. So I don't think there's sort of one size fits all. You've got to be really flexible. I mean, some people, once again, love the team models where creative and media are together again. You know, they're back working as this brilliant collaboration. And so once again, you know, that some clients want that. And I go, hallelujah, you know, because I worked, you know, back in the day at Jagwater Thompson, where we worked incredibly closely with the creative teams. So I think there's different models for different clients. And once again, the client's got to believe that that's going to help grow his business. And there's a real benefit in that versus driving price down or just changing because, you know, I'm new and I need to change something. But like, yeah, so I think there's lots of scale. There's lots of spectrums for it. And I think people are being a bit more creative because I think they're trying to find, you know, and you know, with the state of some of the holding companies now, they have to do it. Like there's no, you know, You got to smash it up and rebuild it now.
Yeah, well, particularly when you've got people like CHEP, BCM, Thinkabell.
Yeah,
know, they're biting on your heels. I mean, you know, you have
to do it.
Yeah,
like you got, and now's, you know, as you say, there's lots of, there's lots of holding companies that literally are smashing it up and looking at how they, you know, they look at the various models. And I think the ones that really do tailor them for the clients.
Mm.
Will be the successful ones. Mm. But because it can't be just cookie cutter, because that doesn't work either, you know.
Well, yeah, we're saying that not work.
So
right,
yeah,
now,
it's about sort of finding the this spectrum of, you know, team models or having strategists with the media or bringing them to, I mean as you say, I think it's a real mixed bag, so you're going to have this whole range of different solutions.
Yeah, I mean, how much of it is also about less is more as well? Because I mean, there's a few, some of those holding groups have got a lot of agencies that,
tell me about it,
can get confusing.
Obviously, my former life, I mean, you know, you can't have Well, you can, but 80 or 90 companies.
Yeah. It becomes a web, right? Like, but it's not just WPP. There's a few of them.
Oh, no. I mean, all the holding companies have this, you know, as you say, crazy selection of companies, and there has to be some, you know, bringing those together, merging, you know, and once again, making it simple for the client to connect with those people, because you don't want all those points of contact. You know, how do you make it easier? And I think people, you know, are listening to the clients and finally looking at some of those structures and just go, we've got to smash it up, you know.
Yeah, and I think from a perspective as well, I think when you sort of do that, you put obviously less stress internally on the people that are working for those agencies that are finding themselves under the pump or finding themselves having to work so hard further because, you know,
yeah,
the pressure's on.
And I guess the thing is, though, when you're, you know, if you've taken a business on and once again it's not profitable, or you're under, you know, once again, you know, incredible pressure from global to deliver revenue and growth, and you're struggling, you don't make smart business decisions normally in that situation because you're not ahead of it. You're not in front of it. So, you know, you don't always make smart decisions in that way. But you've got to smash it up and you know, try something new.
Well, I do want to leave Agency World behind, but I'm not going to. I'm just flat out not going to because something that came across our desks over the past week, and I think everybody in the industry read it, and it was an open letter from Roy Morgan.
Now, is Roy a man or a female, or who's Roy?
I think Roy is an entity.
Right.
I think Roy is an entity.
So does Roy represent some of the young people in our industry?
I think so. I'd like to think of it more. It could be a conglomerate, you know. I like to think of it as Banksy.
Oh, okay.
I still don't know who that is. Like, that's anybody to me.
So
my mum could be Banksy at this point. So, but Roy, I think, yeah, plays a very, maybe more of an image than an individual. But Roy Morgan, I'm using inverted commas here,
yes,
penned an open letter to the industry, slamming the work hours, really putting it to the CEO, saying this needs to change. I suppose I kind of wanted to know what you thought, because I have some opinions.
I agree with Roy.
Yeah.
I think because, once again, you know, I think it's really is tough on some of you know, the people in our agencies because they're overcommitted. You know, they might be 100% of something, but they're actually working, you know, 150% because they're, you know, allocated to a number of clients. The pressures internally for revenue, once again, is high. You know, clients are demanding stuff like, I want this tomorrow. So the pressure and the challenging times, and I think we are burning out staff. The turnover is tough, and I think people are working crazy hours, and I'm not sure some of our management are really honest about that. I think they like to believe that they've got a health and wellness campaign and they've got free fruit and yogurt, that it's all good. Well, yeah, that's bullshit, you know, because if someone's working till midnight and working on the weekends, doesn't matter, you know, if they can get a free yoga class, you know, they probably don't have time to go to the yoga class.
No, I can't pay rent in Pilates.
Okay, that's right. And also just their mental health.
Yeah, you know? Of course. Look,
and there's, once again, lots of agencies are doing some good stuff around that. But is it window dressing and is it real? Because I go, there's a lot of, we don't always practice what we preach, and we sort of say that, oh, we've got this great culture. And once again, you know, you talk about some of that, but are you really living it and breathing it and really delivering on it? And I think there's a lot of bullshit around that. And I think it's a real problem that we need to address.
Well, look, when I've been trying to figure out what this boils down to, I know that, I think there's, yes, you're right, it's very much on that mental health thing. And I think there's an element too of pay. Willie Pang obviously responded, and then I think
Willie should be applauded for responding.
Yes, definitely.
However, I'd say, you know, Willie, give me some concrete actions that you're doing.
Okay.
You know, the intent was there, but I would like to go, okay, what else are you doing, and what is the Media Federation doing, or anybody else? You know, what are the other industry bodies? What are they doing about, you know, sort of real action versus some generalizations. The other thing is too, I think we leave, sometimes we've got all these talented people, but we sort of throw them in the deep end. So I'm not sure we're taking the time to mentor them or coach them or really give them the skills. We're sort of like thrown in the deep end and they got to swim and they're sort of, you know, there they are. But are we really giving them the support? And I think when things are tough, maybe, you know, some of those things are cut back and they're not really, you know, getting the wise counsel or the senior sort of mentorship that they need.
Mm.
Because it's lacking.
I mean, and also I feel like, you know, in that letter, but as well from other conversations, you know, what, to quote, to not to quote someone directly, but anonymously, there was, you know, they said to me, well, that's all well and good to sort of, you know, as you said, have a yoga class or have a mental health break as you say fit, and that's available to you, but not when we're trying to win new business right now.
Yeah.
Because it's 10 p.m. and we've got to get this campaign over the line.
Well, the pitches on Monday, you've got to work on the weekend. We're rehearsing on Sunday.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a real balancing act. And as I said, I don't have all the solutions because, you know, if you're pitching on Monday, there is going to be
An expectation.
You've got to rehearse on the weekend. But then when can you give that person time back to spend for themselves, their mental health, their family, the people they care about? Like, you know, when could you give that back? First, they've been working on a pitch. So their current clients are all stressing because I need this because I haven't seen you for a week. You've been working on a pitch and this has got to be done. So they're, you know, are we giving them enough time to recharge their batteries, be resilient and come back? Because I feel like, you know, there's all these really good people that just go from one to the next, you know.
Yeah.
And it's the good ones that normally, you know, being asked to do all this extra stuff.
Yeah, and look, I mean, there's definitely some really good strategies out there. I must reaffirm that. I think there's definitely, you know, like on our own, our second podcast, which we have with NGen, we had a member from Initiative come in and sort of speak to about a mental first aid and sort of getting trained and things like that.
Brilliant.
But I just think, yeah, it comes, for me, it boils down to how long are you working on a weekly basis?
Yeah.
Are you doing 40? Are you doing 80?
Yeah.
Is it getting out of hand?
And I think, as I said, I mean, you know, when you'd leave the office late at 9 o'clock or something, you see all these people and I'm going, go home. Like, what are you doing here? And you're asking them and then they go, once again, this client expectation's got to be delivered tomorrow. I've got to, you know, put all this, I've got to process some of these bookings. And they're just workloads. So then I go, okay, what is your manager aware of this situation? How else can we help you get through this? And I'm not sure, do people know that the tips and the tricks to sort of the shortcuts and the ways, and are people literally just going, okay, you're doing that the long way, or you can do this more efficiently or effectively? I just feel like sometimes we're sort of missing that now, and people are just, you know, sort of swimming in the rip,
yeah,
you know, and they just don't have time to look back and just go, holy hell, you know, what's the stuff I shouldn't be doing? What is the stuff that's really going to provide that client value?
Yeah, well, look, I'm glad that the conversation has been put out there again as well.
No, it's a healthy conversation.
It's a healthy conversation.
But I would say the industry's got to go, what are concrete action things that we're going to do about it, you know?
Yeah.
And they don't tend to be, you know, once again, you know, you can come in for a yoga class or you can have, you know, till 10 o'clock, you know, to have mental health. Like, well, okay, you were here all weekend, but you can come in an hour late.
Yeah, true. It doesn't stack up.
Yeah.
I guess now, from a conversation about health to something that was quite unhealthy, I think this week was, you know, the YouTube situation that's occurred here with a lot of, I heard it said, and I actually sort of agree with it, it's YouTube's Cambridge Analytica moment.
Totally.
Probably not so much in the level of privacy, but in the level of what exposure is going on. I mean, from my perspective, personally, I have a 15-year-old and a 14-year-old brothers who are obsessed with YouTube.
Right, wow.
I mean, if you were directed in any way, shape, or form, and then you had to see some of your own favorite brands stacked up against these videos, I just think...
Oh, yeah. No, it's unacceptable. I mean, you can't have that. I mean, clients... You know, brand safety is, you know, sort of a pillar of what they, you know, and as you say, it's a really important issue. And I can understand, I'm actually a bit surprised that more clients haven't
pulled.
Yeah. I'm sort of, you know, I know certain people have taken a, you know, stance, and I'm actually surprised that more haven't done that and, you know, really asked once again, like, how can we solve this? Like, what else can be done?
I just think, for me, it blew my mind that the questions came up of how can this be solved? What can we do? What can brands do? My theory is, how the hell can this happen? How could this come to pass?
Because there's so much content that's blown. Like, it's just, it's the massive nature of
how do you police the unpoliceable?
Exactly right. Like, it's because it would be impossible to do that.
Mm.
And, you know, whatever algorithms you put in, they're not up to date as you do them, right? Because they can't keep up to date with, you know. So, yeah, I think it's incredibly challenging. And as again, if I was a client, I think you've got to vote with your dollars, because that's the only way you'll get action.
Mm.
If you sort of turn a blind eye or go, oh, look, you know, I'll leave it, because I think you really got to vote with your dollars, walk from it, and be really tough about how we're going to affect positive outcomes, you know.
I mean, look, I think YouTube's response is it has already seemed like it's going to be pretty swift and quick. But as you said, it's a hard thing to police when you've got a constantly shifting beast as well. But that point you touched on, not enough brands pulling out, that was interesting. I thought...
I just think, as I said, your brand's so important to you, and once again, your brand safety is, once again, I would have thought the most important issue for my brand, that if you don't stand up for that and once again, you know, put pressure to really, you know, make change happen. And the only way you can do that is when the dollars walk, because that's when you get action, right? If you just stay there and just go with the narrative about, oh, we're fixing it.
Everything's coming to hunky-dory, yeah.
So, like, I say you have to pull your dollars and only pull them back when you've gone, yes, I've seen a real action to affect that.
Mm. I think that change. The sort of the other point to it is, does it scare brands off for the future? Does it lead... Is it too deep of a cut to sort of, you know, stitch up?
Because I was going to go, you know, if it's not this, you know, next week, is there some other
style of video
that once again is unsafe for my brand and once again for just the human sort of audience? I say you got to take a hard stance, and also, you know, clients, be strong, like grow some.
Yeah, exactly. Look, I certainly agree. And I think, from a YouTube perspective as well, and this is sort of why I mentioned my siblings, that there's also an element of what's going on as sort of in the predatory nature of what's going on in the comment section as well. You know what I mean? Like, your whole association now is, it's not just you're an advertiser on YouTube, it's that you're tied in with that brand as well. I think that's where it shocked me that, more brands didn't pull out, the whole tie-in together.
And as you say, that is such an important issue at the moment, let's not mention the Cardinal.
No, that's right. I almost thought about mentioning Andrew Bob. I'm going to leave it just because I wanted to end on a lighter note than a darker note.
Right.
I think you mentioned that you really love the recent Heart Foundation campaign.
Yeah, and I thought it was brilliant.
Yeah.
Well, just that, I mean, when I see a great piece of work, and once again, in print, you know, because I think print is incredibly powerful. And then they affected change, I think, within a week, you know, sort of, you know, those heart checks are now going to be included, in the government sort of Medicare allowance or whatever. So to me, it had a striking headline. It was topical about, you know, sort of that whole crime sort of series and murder and mystery. So, God, it got my attention when I saw it in the Sunday Telegraph last week. And, you know, here I am reading it like this, you know, compelling content. And, you know, it was about a real issue. And then it's had a real impact and changed something within a week. Yeah. So I would go, congratulations to the Heart Foundation, congratulations to News Corp, and what a great case study, easy for you to say, Sparrow, for print. Because sometimes, you know, we talk about some of the other mediums, but, you know, there's print who, really has done a great job.
Yeah.
And saving people's lives, like, you know, should be more of that.
Yeah, exactly right. Well, I mean, I think that's a good note to end on, considering that
saving lives.
Saving lives. I think saving lives is always a good way to end. I'm going to say thank you very much for coming on.
Mate, no worries.
It's been
happy
a pleasure.
To be here.
And thank you again. And we'll see you next time, I'm sure.
No worries. All Thanks, buddy.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.